I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can find the books, people, recipes, tips, restaurants, value wines, and easy cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. We all love animal stories, and if you have a companion animal, a good vet's advice is invaluable, and that's what we have for you. He's a vet in Windham, Connecticut. Dr. Todd Friedland, longtime contributor to our show, is back. We'll hear some animal stories because Todd collects them personally and professionally. And we'll take your calls if you want your relationship with an animal companion to be the best it can be. Dogs, cats, training, housebreaking, Lyme disease, persistent barking. I was thinking of the list. Fleas, biting, pet insurance. That's a big one. We'll get to as much as possible, vaccinations. And we want to hear from you during this hour with your questions. Welcome back, Dr. Todd Friedland.
Oh, hi, Faith. It's so great to be back.
Oh, it's great. So let me tell you a quick story.
Sure.
I have helped an aunt in her 90s rescue a small dog that she met when she was on vacation on the island of Bonaire in the Caribbean. And she goes every year and snorkels and visits. She's a big rescue person, and she visits the animal shelter always to see how all the animals are doing. And on the last trip, she fell madly in love, came back and said, with great seriousness, I've fallen in love with this dog, and I have to have him. And I was concerned because she's 92, and I wondered if, you know, how small, how large. Turned out to be a pretty small dog, not miniature, but not a bad size. And so I decided I was going to help her. And so I arranged with her to have someone, a good friend, go get this dog. And this dog was brought back from brought back from Bonaire. And it is a thing that has changed her life, my aunt. She is alive again in a way that is so impressive. She is so in love. This dog seems to know he's been rescued, and it's the deepest kind of love affair.
This is pretty interesting because this is if someone were to ask me, you know, I've been doing this for 41 years, what keeps me going? One of the things is what pets do to people. It just really affects me on a daily basis, and especially, we talked before the show, especially the elderly. So, and I will tell you just it's funny that you say that this dog was from Bonaire. We're going there this winter. We have friends that have a house there. And you're very fortunate because our friends are into rescuing donkeys. So you could have brought back a donkey. That would have really changed your life.
I can imagine that phone call from my aunt.
Yeah, there's some kind of a donkey thing. Yeah, I'll check it out when I go there in February, but there's some kind of a donkey thing going on in Bonaire.
It's the point at which people say, I say that all the time.
Right, you know? Right.
Baba boom.
Right. However, I will tell you that three or four times in my career, people your and my age, baby boomers, we're not going to be exact, come into my office and they say, my mother has a dog or a cat, and we, whoever we are, the brothers and sisters, think it's way too much work for my mother to do, to take care of, and we would like you to put this dog to sleep. Faith's eyes just got as big as dinner plates when I said that for our listeners. And I look at them and I say exactly what the story you just told, which is I say, I don't know you very well, but I'm going to tell you how I feel. Your mom loves you, but she gets up in the morning for the dog. And that's exactly the change that has occurred in your aunt. It gives her a purpose. Whereas before, what was her purpose? To get up and brush her teeth.
Wow. And right? this is the greatest dog.
And it will send chills down. I mean, it's really an amazing thing. And everybody's heard a little bit about, fish tanks or this or that that help people. And you can read about it all you want. But until Faith saw it happen with her aunt, you can't feel it. And when you feel it, it's such an amazing experience.
Todd, the deer are everywhere right now.
Oh, sure. They're in my garden, too.
And yeah, they're eating like crazy. They seem pretty hungry. Is this rutting season?
Mating season. So, you got to be a little careful now. They're a little bit more active now. It's also hunting season. So they're a little bit stressed because, there are hunters out there. But there are some that believe, this year, they ate my rhubarb leaves this year. Now, you and I aren't going to ever eat rhubarb leaves if we want to live. They're toxic. But they ate all my rhubarb leaves this year. And they ate things in my garden that they've never, ever touched before. And there are some that believe that this is a warning of it's going to be a cold or a cold. They're eating it for a reason. They're eating it because they're building up for the winter. And so there are some people that believe this is going to be a tough winter. I don't really know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But they're really aggressive right now.
Is that true about some animals that they are signals kind of winter? The coat that they develop, the coat. Thickness?
If you look at one of the neatest things is frogs. Frogs dig into the ground to protect themselves from the frost. They don't freeze because they can produce this high amount of sugar in their blood, which stops it from freezing. Don't know where the sugar comes from. Maybe they eat Oreos. I don't really know. But basically, they dig down to various depths, and they always dig down below wherever the frost is going to be. Otherwise, they would die. So where the frogs go and the turtles go, some people interpret as a signal that we're going to have a deep frost, which means a colder winter and things like this.
Do you mean how deep they go
down?
How deep
in the ground, yes.
So do we know? Who's a frog watcher?
I don't really know. There must be somebody. My practice is in North Windham, which is right near Storrs, so I've never bothered to ask, but I could, I guess, call the extension service and say, put the frog guy on. And
we need to find this.
Well,
out.
I know where I could find out, because I once had to help a young child with Siamese earthworms, and he was going to do a profound one, and he was going to do a project on it. This is a very long time ago, and the Natural History Museum in New York City was the end source for all the information that we got about these things. So they probably would have somebody there.
A million years ago, when I was in London, I turned. They had a radio in my room, and I turned on BBC show, and they had a half-hour documentary on the radio about this special place where at this time in the year the frogs cross the road. And it was the most eccentric, fabulous half hour. I mean, definitely Saturday Night Live material.
Oh, absolutely.
But so interesting to hear how they made this come alive for people who were listening. It was so, my thing with frogs goes back a long way.
Well, and I'm from Windham. You went to school in Eastern. Frogs are they're the mascot of the Windham, of the town of Windham. So, it's pretty
to the
interesting.
Dismay
but
of
animals,
athletes.
Animals have to know. And whatever that word means, whatever no means to an animal, they have to prepare or they die. So they're.
Well, let's talk about what animals know. There was a story in the Times recently about a group of scientists who trained dogs to sit completely still in an MRI machine. And then they, for fairly short periods of time,
right.
But they wanted to watch their brain scans light up to see where they were processing things. And in the end, they did enough of these dogs to find out that humans and dogs are processing emotions and feelings and reactions to things in the same places.
I'm not totally surprised when you read about all of the gene research that's going on now, and that you and I are 5% of our genes away from being an eggplant. So it's pretty incredible. It really is pretty incredible. And it never surprises me that the brain of animals is that similar to the brain of people. It doesn't surprise me.
So you brought up a vegetable.
Oh, here we go.
I was just waiting for that moment on the show. Dr. Todd Friedland is a contributor to our show, longtime contributor. He is a vet in Windham, Connecticut, has been in practice many years, has the best stories, and I think the just wonderful advice. And so he's going to help you out as you call in throughout the show. Todd is always so kind. When he's not working, he's often gardening and biking, and he brought me a jar of this peach hot pepper jam. He makes the best. And so secret ingredients he will not reveal, so I can't wait to have it.
Well, it's going to be, I have different ways to use it. I know you're going to go home and put it cream cheese on a cracker. That's the first way.
Also,
we actually did a show on this jam. Do you remember?
I do, yeah. And that's when the Fooch Moose first started.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
So thank you so much for this. So will animals eat hot things? Because you gave me hot pepper jam.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. Birds do not taste hot peppers. So if you go to a pet shop or someplace and look at parrot mix, you'll see hot peppers in there, and they tend to enjoy them, but they don't have the sensors in their tongue that would react to the capsaicin, to the chemical that produces the heat, or that is the heat. So you can put all the hot peppers you want in birds. And actually, if you look at a suet, there's often pieces of hot pepper, so they don't. Other animals, it's a tolerance like it is with people. Like some people say, well, I'm not going to let my dog lick the bandage that Dr. Friedland put on. I'll put Tabasco on it. Well, dogs tend to like Tabasco. So that's a hot sensation that they tend to enjoy. I don't know why. It probably has a lot of sugar in it. But I think heat doesn't scare away a lot of dogs. It will scare away a cat.
Can they become sick from...
I think, and just like you and I could, I have to think about it. There's no disease, but I think any animal with a digestive tract that puts too much of this stuff that's a little harder to digest, say, than oatmeal, through their digestive tract might have a problem.
We're going to get to Lyme ticks now. Yeah. I know you've been waiting for this because this is a very important topic right now. It has been for the decade, but right now, very, very serious. While we're on this subject of what animals can eat, I wanted to make sure, because the holidays are just around the corner, people start saying things about wanting to surprise children and loved one with an animal, with a pet. And things for people who have Christmas trees get left around the tree, or if you're giving Hanukkah presents, it can involve chocolate. Chocolate, very dangerous for dogs.
Very dangerous. It's dose-related, so it's a certain amount of chocolate per pound of dog. And it really needs to be real chocolate. I mean, we get calls that say, my dog just ate an M&M. Not a problem. I don't think there's any chocolate in an M&M anyway. But certainly the good chocolate. People just have to be I like to say the word, without trying to insult people, I try to say just use common sense.
Don't wrap it up and put it under.
Well, every year, we could talk about the two, Thanksgiving and Christmas, a little bit differently, but every year we get calls about dogs that break into the chocolate that's under the tree, and people are so surprised. They say it was wrapped. How could the dog smell it? They can smell at least 100 times more with more sensitivity than we have. So they smell these things, and why wouldn't they eat it if it smelled good? I mean, that they're just being a dog. That's all they're being, is a dog. This smells good. I'm going to eat it. And certainly paper is not an obstacle for a dog. So they chew through it, and we get these calls all for the week or two before Christmas. I don't think a week goes by without 5 calls. My dog ate the candy under the tree.
And talk about the leaping thing. Dogs can leap up onto the most amazing surfaces.
So there are certain things just
the turkeys. So.
That's right. Well, we had dinner at somebody's house the other night before a concert at UConn, and one of the stories that came out was that the dog took a medium sized dog took a 27 pound turkey off the table and ate it. The guests were in the kitchen, schmoozing over shrimp cocktail, and then turkey was gone. So you have to be aware of what – it's not the only time it's happened. You have to really be aware. But there's danger. The chocolate is mm-hmm. danger. Pancreatitis, horrible disease, inflammation of the pancreas. It can be triggered by an extremely fatty meal. Well, we're at the dinner table. It's Thursday. It's Thanksgiving. What is everybody giving to the dog who's begging at the table? A piece of skin, which is fat. So the Friday of that weekend is always a upset stomach day at the veterinary hospital.
Oh, interesting.
Always. And some of these dogs are really, really sick.
This is a good tip. That's very good. Yeah. I'm with Dr. Todd Friedland of Wyndham, Connecticut, a longtime contributor to the show, our vet, and he will take your calls in the segments coming up at 203-776 WNPR 9677, and we'll be right back. Find what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on programs to find the Faith Middleton Show. My guest, longtime contributor, Dr. Todd Friedlem, a vet in Windham, Connecticut. We'd love to hear from you about how you have solved the challenge with your companion animals so others can benefit from that. Or you can ask Dr. Friedland a question. And he also welcomes questions from people who are, you know, it's like that sex thing where, you know, these are the questions people are afraid to ask. You can really, truly ask just about anything.
You can ask me anything. I'm
about
willing
animals.
To go. Right.
203 or world politics.
That's right.
Chinese. 203-776-WNPR. Jenny, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead, Jenny.
I have a question about introducing cats to one another.
Oh, good one.
I have one cat right now. She's a six-year-old female, and I have two cats that live with my parents that were mine before I moved to Connecticut a few years ago. This Christmas season, I'm going back, and I'm going to bring them back with me. But I have, at home, I have another girl cat who's six and another boy cat who's five, and that'll be who's coming back with me. And I was just curious, what is the best way, because my understanding is that introducing two adult female cats to each other can be a challenge.
So let's find out. Todd, what is this based on gender, or is it just, you know, the dominant cat, the cat in the present?
Yeah, policy? I don't, unless the cats are calico cats, they're a little special. About 80% of the cats that are named Sassy are calico cats, just so you know that. But I don't think gender, at least in my experience, has played a big role here. This is not your parents' house. This is your parents' cat's house. You know, so that's just the truth. I mean, as far as from the cat's point of view, this domain is theirs. So bringing in another cat it doesn't necessarily have to work out. And there are different ways to do this. I tend to be down and dirty about this. It's you know, we have the two cats that are at the house, at your parents' house. So they have their own litter boxes. They have their own food bowls. They have their own bedding areas. And so I think preparing with at least twice what you think your new cat will need. In other words, two new litter boxes in different areas, different food bowls, you know, the bedding area, cats choose that, whatever couch they want to lay on or whatever bed they want to lay in. But if there are beds that your parents have or special areas that they have, it should be provided for the new cat as well. That's not to say that all the cats are going to work this out, but cats need their own spaces. I think that separating these cats for some period of time, maybe it's arbitrary, maybe 5 days, maybe a week. So your cats, when you move in, are in a room that your other cats recognize that this cat's in the house, probably isn't a bad idea. And feeding the cats in that bedroom, the new cats in that bedroom, so that the other cats theoretically still have most of their own mm-hmm. domain. But if, you know, eventually, and there are all kinds of theories. If you go online, if you subscribe to Karen Overall, who's the head of behavior at University of Pennsylvania, amazing veterinarian, knows a lot of things. She'll give you an 8-week
introduction,
progressive manner to do this by feeding them on either side of a door and all this. My experience has been that what it boils down to is that eventually they're going to have to be together. And my clients who have just put the cats together and let them work it out, I think have had the most success.
So that's Karen Overhaul.
Overall. O-V-E-R-A-L-L. University of Pennsylvania Behavior
Clinic.
Okay,
and we're going to post that that link on our site. So you can go to
University of Pennsylvania Veterinary
School. So you can go to WNPR.org and click on programs for the Faith Middleton Show. When you come to our site, you'll see that the link to that site.
Yeah, so it's going to be complicated. It's not going to be easy. You can, you know, separate them for 4 or 5 days and then put them together, but eventually they're going to have to work it out.
We're going to go to the phones in a second, but Todd, I wanted to ask you about Lyme disease. This has been around for a long time now. Is it worse? Is there anything new in terms of a treatment? What's happening for you as a vet in the Lyme disease
as a
world?
The first thing I want to say is that in the last 3 weeks, there's been these articles in the paper that say that the estimates now are that Lyme disease affects 10 times as many people as they thought it did in the United States. I think that that's off by a factor of at least 10 again. I mean, it's just, you know, we hear about this every day. Lyme disease, tick disease. I don't want to narrow it down just to Lyme disease, because Ehrlichia, Babesia, all of these things are just as bad. Mm-hmm. The biggest problem with these diseases is
Lone Star, right?
Yeah. Well, Lone Star tick. Now, just in the other day, Lone Star ticks can cause your body as a human. We don't know about this in dogs yet, to produce chemicals that make you allergic to the sugar that's in beef. So we have this huge number of people that have developed these beef allergies for unknown reasons, and now they're looking at that. The issue is that it's really, really important to protect yourself against ticks. And the best way to do that, if you have pets, is to use products that your veterinarian recommends. You know, there are six or eight of them on the market. Stay away from the generics. They're not the same. Even though they say they're the same, they are not the same.
Are you talking about treating the person or
the
animals?
I'm talking about prevention. By putting things on your animal that kill the ticks before they have a chance to affect you.
Okay.
Or infect and affect you.
Are there changes?
One of the big products that was on the market lost its patent, so that there are now generics, and the generics are not the same. Okay? Mm. And the generics that you buy in the big box stores say, just like Frontline. Well, let me tell you something. They are not. Okay, even though the active ingredient is there, they don't spread on your pet the same way, so they don't cover your pet the same way. And there's no way for the consumer to know this. This is just, you know, marketing and consumerism.
What is a good product?
I think here's the thing. There are about five or six on the market right now that are – and this is kind of how you do it. And people want to buy on the internet, and they want to do all these things. This is what we recommend. You don't necessarily have to buy from your veterinarian, but I'm going to make that a very, very strong recommendation for this reason. Your veterinarian buys directly from the company that makes the product. The online places do not. They do not buy directly, so we don't know where it's coming from, and there are counterfeits out there. So if you're going to buy online, you buy it, you get a serial number on the box, you call the company that made it, and you make sure it's real. I tell that to everybody. If you buy from your veterinarian, what people don't know is that if you do get an infestation of fleas or ticks with these products, those companies will actually pay for getting the bugs out of your house because they stand by their product, but only if you bought it from your veterinarian. And most veterinarians now, their prices are very competitive. So the issue is there are five or six. They all work. They all work really well. And some veterinarians recommend some and some recommend others. My office, we get free everything. And all my staff, 18 people with I don't know how many pets, 40 pets altogether, they all use this product called Frontline. But if they used Advantix or they use Vectra, I wouldn't care because they all work. There are about five or six on the market. So go, you have a relationship with
the generics.
Stay away
not,
from the generics.
They don't work.
Go to your veterinarian. You have a relationship with your veterinarian, I hope, and ask what he is finding in your area works the best. And that's the product that you use.
Okay. Eric Faith Middleton with our longtime contributor, the vet, Dr. Todd Friedland, who lives and practices in Windham, Connecticut. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi, Dr. and Faith. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for your patience.
Another cat call. My cat in the morning, after her morning meal, 7 a.m., she'll start howling on the kitchen table. And then lately she's been howling in human words, saying my name, or my wife's name, which is Leslie, or mass saying hello. What is this all about? Do cats think? Can they think?
Oh, I'm sure they process. I don't know if they think, but I need to ask you a question. This is after a meal?
After a meal, at 7 a.m., we have a machine that operates every 12 hours. It feeds her.
Okay.
It's a great machine. It frees us up having to get up.
All right, so let me ask you.
So you're
question.
Not punking us.
How old is this cat?
7 years old.
Okay, so I'm going to be the medical guy for a minute, and I'm going to say, why is a cat vocalizing after eating? And I would wonder if there's some kind of pain that cat is exhibiting, and I'd have to ask that question before I did anything else.
Yes, but we did have a tooth problem about 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm thinking about intestinal pain. I don't, you know, this is a radio show, so it's hard for me to know without examining your cat. But that would be actually my first question is, why is this? Now, there's another thing. That cat may have vocalized once after a meal. You can imagine whatever it says. I know that my friend, my dear friend, my bicycling buddy, when his cat Abby was alive, used to tell me that his cat was saying all these words, and that cat had a severely overactive thyroid gland that was stimulating the brain, and all these noises were coming out, and you know, that kind of thing. So that was an older cat. Your cat probably doesn't have that particular problem, but there's also another thing here. You know, cats are not stupid. We're stupid. Cats are smart. That's kind of the way I think about it. So if your cat vocalized once, and you guys paid attention to your cat, and you said to the cat in whatever language the cat understands, wow, that's a really good thing that you did. So here's some rewards, whether it's petting or whatever it was. That cat will just keep doing it and doing it and do it. And the more the cat does, the more reaction you give. So I'm going to guess it's in one of those two categories.
All right. Good luck with it, Eric.
YouTube. Put it on YouTube.
Yes, exactly. 203-776-9677. Dr. Todd Friedland is here. Todd, I'm sorry to say that I know you had to put your own dog down.
Yes.
That's Pepper.
We put Pepper to sleep 2 weeks ago.
Pepper is a rescue.
Pepper, well, this is an interesting thing. I guess you call her a rescue. An elderly couple who brought Pepper to me since their puppy at 11 years old came in and said, we are moving to senior housing. It's some kind of funded senior housing. And it was because of illness or unable to maintain a house. And we have to put Pepper to sleep. And I was like, whoa. You know, that first of all, people need to know about Todd. Todd does not euthanize healthy animals, period. Doesn't mean I save their lives. They may go somewhere else. But Todd needs to sleep at night. So we don't do that. And my staff backs me up 100% on this, which should be obvious. But they came to me we had lost a dog 3 years earlier as a very young dog, and Mona and I had brought two dogs home. We weren't ready. We just weren't, even 3 years later, we weren't ready. I'm looking at this little Shih Tzu, and I'm going, oh, man, I think I'm ready. I said, take the dog home. I'll see what I can do on this end, and yeah, whatever. A week or two later, they came back, and they said, okay, you have to put her to sleep today. We're moving, like, tomorrow. I put out my arms, like I'm putting them towards Faith right now, and Pepper was in my arms. Man was crying, and he gave up his dog. And that's how we got Pepper. So
how old was Pepper at
11.
That
point? 11, with a little heart murmur, generally very healthy. And so they were very heavy cigarette smokers. The dog was kind of matted. So I kept Pepper in the hospital for a couple of days to kind of detoxify her. And we brought her home, and we had her for 4 years. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful dog. Mm-hmm. And then she died of congestive heart failure. So she did all right. If you're a dog and you're going to retire in my house. It's not a bad place. So Pepper retired in our house for 4 years.
So you didn't walk her. You would just let her out.
We have the invisible fence.
And do you believe in that?
I like it. But it really depends upon what your lifestyle is. Now, we live in Mansfield, Connecticut. Okay, so we have some land. And I really think that if you have the opportunity to let a dog wander around wherever they want and whenever they can, it's better. It's a better thing for the dog than walking on a leash. That is not... Dr. Friedland did not say it's not okay to walk your dog on a leash. I just said, if you have the option, I think running around free is a better option. We actually do both. We did both. So I put in an invisible fence, actually for another dog, two dogs ago, years and years ago. And I like that. And I like it for people who can't put up a fence. We chose that we did not want to put up a fence. It's a lot less expensive than putting up a fence. I got mine for free, folks. You know, the companies come to us and say, we'll put it in if you'll advertise this. I'm not going to tell you which company it is. Doesn't matter. They all work. So we had that, and Pepper could wander around the yard, and she was raised in a house with a cat. We have three outdoor cats that just love Pepper, and they would hang out together. It was really pretty Shangri-La. It was like Shangri-La for the dog and the cats. Do I have an objection to walking your dog? Absolutely not. I mean, it just whatever works for you.
What kind of leash do you like? You
6 foot leash, your standard dog leash, 2 times a year on average. You know the leashes that you can lock and unlock; they go 30 feet out. Mm-hmm. 2 times a year in my practice. I'm sure you could survey practices and find this out. They're on the rope. Owners are on the road with their dogs. Car comes. Dog runs out, fumbling with the hand thing. Dog runs out that 30 feet, hit by a car on the end of a leash.
And here's another thing with that leash you're talking about where you can click it on and off.
Right.
I was walking down the street on an exercise walk, and the dog walker had not clicked it the right way, and the dog was a biter and bit me. So, and the poor dog walker was fumbling and saying, oh, I just had no idea that was going to happen. And so you know, that's a lawsuit in
the
making.
It's the same experience. You know, these. If it were up to me, everybody out there that had the 30-foot lead would throw them away today. Is there a place for them? Sure. When you're alone in the park, not a problem. But when you're around other people or the danger of a car accident, I will tell you 100% of the time that under time of duress, panic, action, something going on, you're not going to know how to lock that thing. And your dog may already be 20 feet away from you.
Yeah. All right. Doctor, we're going to get to pet insurance coming up here on the show. This is very interesting because there are places in the country where it is very popular. And there are places in the country here in the Northeast where pet insurance is not very popular. We're going to look into this about, you know, when you put two dogs side by side and one family has taken out pet insurance and the other one hasn't, with vet bills rising as much as they are, and the reasons for that, what happens if you compare those dogs side by side? So we're going to get into pet insurance. Michelle Faith Middleton with our vet, Dr. Todd Friedland of Windham, Connecticut. Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi, Faith. Hi, Todd.
Hi. Thanks.
I lost my beloved cat a couple months ago.
Sorry.
I rescued him when he was 3 months old off the street, and we were together for more than 16 years. And I just wonder, how long does it take? And he isn't the first pet that I've had. I grew up with animals. I feel like I never want to have another pet. And
well, Michelle, this is a great thing you're raising, because this is about you know, implicit in your question about how long it takes for the grief over the loss of an animal to wane. But also it's a question about the respect for this kind of grief. So, Todd, would you come?
Sure. You know, if you had euthanized your cat, and again, I'm very sorry, in my office, one of the things I might have said to you was, you know, I know your friends are going to understand, because you choose your friends, basically, but you have to be careful. Some people at work are going to go, hey, Michelle, for $5, you can get another cat. I used to get very angry at those people. Now I just feel sorry for them, because they don't understand what I know Faith has gone through this, and what, you know, Mona and I are just going through, and what Michelle is going through. It's a big deal. It is a big deal. How long is enough? My mom grieved for 7 years, what it took for her to forget Boots, our childhood dog, was we moved. And just getting her out of that environment kind of snapped her out of it. Michelle, what I will tell you, and I'm not your analyst in any way, is that often this pet grieving that hangs on for years and years and years is just a signal that there's some other things going on. And actually, your veterinarian should be able to connect you with, if you care to, a network of psychologists in Connecticut that deal with pet grieving. That being said, personally, I think what you're going through is very normal. And I have said to people, I have felt worse losing pets than I have some of my family. It's because my pets were part of my daily life every day. And I think that over the years, we've become a little bit more reliant on the relationship that we have with our pets. So it's a bigger loss than maybe it used to be with the farm cat. So I think that you are normal. You know, I don't know who you are, but I think that you're normal. I hear about this all the time. I don't think it's wrong for you to go back, if you had a good relationship with your veterinarian, to go back and talk to him about it and say, hey, you know, am I okay? Because you think you're not okay, Michelle, right? She's still there?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
She's gone.
Michelle, you may not even think you're okay. You're okay. It takes a long, long time for some people. And then Faith and I talked about this on the show. There are some people that lose a pet of 15, 16 years. By the way, when I die and come back as a cat, I'm coming to your house, Michelle. I want to live there for 16 years. I think you need to talk to people. That's the bottom line. You need to talk to your veterinarian. And if you care to, you're going to find out that if you look into this, you're not the only person. There will be a cat that looks you in the eye one day, and it's yours. That's what's going to happen. I guarantee it.
Yeah, cat will choose you.
Absolutely.
So, Todd, in our family, we had a beloved dog, Ashley, a Cocker Spaniel. And we were so grief-stricken, all of us. This dog played a special role. And so one of the things that I watched my sister do was have an artist draw on a kitchen tile, wall tile, a portrait of Ashley, and that went on the wall in the kitchen. And there was something about that where we were honoring Ashley's memory and, you know, remembering her in certain ways, our activities. But I think it eased the guilt of moving on to another animal. There was something about it that gave permission.
Guilt is huge. You know, sorry, feeling sorry for yourself. It's okay to have a pity party for a little while, and then it's time, you know, whenever that time is, it's very individual to move on. At our office, you know, we make a clay paw print of every pet that dies in our office, and you have to bake it. It's got the pet's name on it, and we either, if people come back for ashes, for cremation, we give it to them then, or we mail it to them. And I can't tell you the feedback that we do that, and we make a donation to a Cornell. I'm an alumnus of Cornell, so we make a donation to the Cornell cat or dog research facilities up there. And maybe, Michelle, if you're still listening, maybe if you make a donation in your pet's honor, if someone hasn't done that, you will feel that your pet cat lived for a reason. If that reason would be to find out something that will help some other cat in the future. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do to make yourself feel better.
As promised, we're going to talk with vet Dr. Todd Friedland about pet insurance. Why it's so controversial in the Northeast, and how it's helping some people. So stick around. We'll be right back. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, that's FaithWNPR, or join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. This show is about the richness of life. It is great to have you with us. Todd Friedland is here. Lucky us. He is a longtime vet, longtime contributor to this show. He lives in Windham, works in Windham, Connecticut. And we're taking your calls at 203-776-9677. Let's get into pet insurance, and then I'll go to the phones. Todd, okay. You said to me before the show started that in the Northeast, we're just not aware of pet insurance very much, whereas in other parts of the country, it's very popular and used all the time. If you had a couple of animals in your practice side by side, and you had one person with appropriate pet insurance, because I don't know the difference between these companies, and somebody else without it, with vet bills as they are right, you know, in these days, what would you see?
Okay, someday we'll do a show about why veterinary bills are so high. You know, that's a whole nother show. But let's just say that that's just everybody that has a pet knows that they are, and they're going to get higher, and there's more and more work that we want to do for pets, and we use machinery, sophisticated things that cost money. Pet insurance on the West Coast, almost everybody has pet insurance. On the East Coast, 2 or 3% of people have pet insurance. And the most common comment that I get is, what if I don't use it? I have to pay for it. What if I don't use it? And my comeback is, I pay a lot of money for insurance every month. I pay car insurance. I pay insurance on my house. I pay life insurance. I don't ever want to use any of that stuff. So, but it's an investment in protecting yourself. And pet insurance should be the same way. I think everybody should have pet insurance today. So the two dogs. Actually, those two dogs are in my practice right now. Hmm. We have two dogs with cancer. We have one family that has pet insurance. We have one family that does not have pet insurance. Both families have agreed to treat their dogs. And the treatments are going to be – I think that the whole thing is going to end up being very rewarding, even though both cancers are going – they're very similar cancers. So the scenario really is two that's the same. Out-of-pocket expense for the insured, for the uninsured family, $7,000. And that does not – that's at 6 months of treatment. And that's when the treatment will probably end. And then if it goes into remission, fine. They both are in remission now. But if we get back the cancer and we want to treat again, it could even be more. There's follow-up blood tests. But at the end of the 6 months, it's $7,000. Out of pocket for the insured family, it was $2,000, plus whatever they've been paying for their insurance. The difference was that the agony that the uninsured family went through to see if they would want to go ahead and treat their dog for cancer, because it involves a little surgery, a lot of drugs, a lot of blood tests, the agony that they went through, with the finances being a major consideration, did not exist for the family that had the insurance. Okay, treat my dog. We have insurance. And that's what we see. Now, veterinary insurance is different than human insurance. The veterinary insurance, you'd except for one company, you pay the bill to the veterinarian, and then you recoup your money from the insurance company. And that, when you met one company, and I can't think of the name right now, pays the veterinarian directly so that you don't have to come out with that money out of pocket. Mm. And by the way, that $7,000 is not all in one lump sum. It goes over 6 months' time. But and which insurance to get, you mentioned that you're not really familiar.
Yeah, how
you need to talk. I have my preferences, but you talk to your veterinarian about – I'm all about relationships with your veterinarian – about what insurance he has found that his clients are happy with. Chances are it would be the same ones I'm happy with. And what judges that for me? A, the amount that they pay back, and B, how fast they pay back.
Do you mean the amount that
– the percentage that they pay back of the bill.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay.
So so a vet is going to be in favor of the higher reimbursement from a particular –
Well, it's higher reimbursement for you. The veterinarian's really not involved. Let's say that tomorrow uh-huh. I'm doing a surgery on a – not tomorrow, Wednesday. I don't work Tuesdays anymore. I'm doing a surgery on a cat. It's going to cost $2,000. If this owner had, and she's been saving for months and months and months for this, and the cat has been on narcotic pain meds and all kinds of things so she can get herself ready, it's just not a happy situation. But the cat's going to have a surgery, and the cat's going to do fine. So that $2,000, if you used one of two insurance companies that I'm very familiar with, you would probably get back about, with cooperation from your veterinarian, about $1,600 back. In 2 weeks.
Hmm.
It's not a bad deal.
Is there a red flag if you're looking at pet insurance and the minute you see that, back away?
I would say when people come to me and say, oh, I get my pet insurance through my homeowner's policy, I would say don't do that. I would say use one of the dedicated veterinary insurance programs that have been around for a while. I mean, one of them is Veterinary Pet Insurance, VPI. Very good company. The other one is through the SPCA. And you just go on ASPCA and website and, you know, just find out.
Is it like long-term care insurance for grown-ups? If your pet is a certain age,
well,
do you get charged more because they're likely to start having...
Premiums actually go up a little bit as your pet ages. Pre-existing conditions are a real big deal. It's very inexpensive when you start as a puppy. But I'll tell you, it's just like this obstacle I don't understand. IAMS, the pet food company, was giving a promotion 3 months free insurance for your puppy. And it failed. It succeeded beautifully on the West Coast and failed on the East Coast. Failed.
Wow.
So the only thing I can say is the comment I always get is, I'm going to pay $100 a month or $30 a month. There's all different kinds of programs. What if I don't use it? I've wasted the money. That's what I hear. And I guess you're right.
And probably cheaper to sign up if you start early.
Oh, yes.
Even though you're paying longer over time.
The companies are much more favorable to that than they are if you start with a six-year-old dog.
And over time, the cost of vet bills is going to go up, of course, because of the new technologies. And because of what we ask for.
Well, this is what we talked about before the show. People now, because of information so available, want the same care for their pets as they expect the same care as they get for their themselves or their children. And I will tell you, in my office, you know, I have a $25,000 digital x-ray machine that we have to have now because of standard of care. We have dental x-ray digital. We have I hate to throw out these numbers, but a $25,000 ultrasound machine that people are demanding that we learn how to use and that we use. Well, you know, that's where the bills build up. They really build up.
Donna Faith Middleton with vet Dr. Todd Friedland. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Donna.
Thank you. I was hoping you could help me. I just had to put my dog down October 8th. Thank you. And she was a rescue, a yellow lab and golden retriever mix. I guess my question is, if I give you some of the problems she had, I just want to know that it wasn't something that could be worked out. They never were able to diagnose her. She wound up having two ultrasounds. They gave her an Addison's test and tick-borne disease test. They gave her blood work. And she was very anemic, they said, and when we did put her down, it was, I guess, a number 10 blood count, so she needed blood transfusions. And they told me it was going to be $3,000 or $4,000 just to diagnose her. So I didn't have the money, and we put her down. But now I'm kind of feeling like...
Mm-hmm. Here comes the guilt.
Here comes the guilt. Exactly.
My mother was a famous travel agent. She specialized in guilt trips, so I know all about this, okay? Your dog died of cancer. That would be my first guess. And the breed that it was, I would guess that it was probably that. It's really impossible. Your dog is not here anymore. Don't have my hands on your dog. The diagnostics, as you just fed into our pet insurance discussion, the diagnostics are extremely expensive because I'm sure they wanted to start doing some biopsies and things. You did it all right. You did it up to the point where you couldn't do it anymore. Your dog was suffering, and you put your dog to sleep. And I think that's all the right course to take. Finances do create the stop sign for much of what veterinarians do. It's just the fact, just the way that it is. I can't tell you what your dog died of. It sounds like your dog was brought through a diagnostic journey that had to go further, and it couldn't be done. And that I think you're okay. I'm not here to make everybody feel better, but I think you're okay. I'm going to tell you a very quick story. My Uncle Sid, he, in his 80s, went through way more diagnostics than any dog I've ever put through. Anything. I mean, PET scans, cat, all these. He got the same thing. He was just not doing well. And it wasn't until surgery that they found the cancer. So all the diagnostics of the world outside of his body didn't help. And they opened him up because that was the last resort. And they found that he had a tumor. So I'm not surprised that all these diagnostics didn't come up with your answer. But with that kind of scenario, how old was the dog?
He was 11.
Cancer is the most likely, all the other things are treatable. So if it's Lyme disease, if it's tick-borne disease, if they're thinking about it, they throw antibiotics at your dog and you maybe see a response. But cancer doesn't get better. Mm. It just gets worse as you're trying to figure it out.
Oh, Donna, I hope that helps.
Thank you so much. I
okay.
really appreciate it.
Enjoy your day and your week.
No guilt.
Okay, thank
no
you.
Guilt.
No guilt, Donna. Okay, thanks.
You know, Faith, I have to say this. Anybody that pursues illness in their pet should not feel guilty. If their pet's not well and they're approaching their veterinarian and they're saying, let's go to step one or step two or whatever, all the way up to step whatever until something, pet suffering, finances, whatever it is, puts the stop sign up. I take one of my exercises if I were in that room just with this woman right now, I would take a piece of paper, I would write the word guilt on it, I would write a little line on the top and a little arrow that said tear here and tear up that guilt. All right? You want to be guilty? Let your pet die at home suffering, which we see, and not do anything about it. So I hope you're still listening.
Thank you, Todd Friedland, our vet. Fran, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show. Go ahead, Fran.
Hello, Faith. Hello, Dr. Friedman.
Hello there, Fran.
My son lost his beautiful golden retriever, 6 years old, about 4 or 5 months ago, from lymphoma, and then he went into kidney failure. Now, all this stuff in the past week about these dog treats that are made in China, it turns out that one of Cody's very favorite treats, he used to beg for them, was this chicken treat that was made in China. So now they're feeling bad that maybe, you know, by letting him have those, that somehow or other that caused.
Okay, let me help you out
and
here.
And Fran, we have about 45
right.
seconds.
Let me help you
I'm
out
so
here.
Glad you brought this up. Thank you.
You got a breed of dog where lymphoma is never a surprise. There's no evidence that the things that are coming over from China, first of all, buy things that were made in America because we have better quality control. That's all I'm going to tell you. Pig's ears, all these things, if they're not made in America, don't buy them, period. So it's very unlikely that those things had anything to do with the lymphoma. And lymphoma is a middle-aged dog. It's going to take your dog in the middle of its life. And horrible, absolutely horrible. So I think and there's a lot of research going on as to why, but I think it's not that. It's just who your dog was, and I'm very sorry.
Dr. Todd Friedland, a vet in North Windham, Connecticut, great as always. And this show is about the richness of life. Find the books, people, recipes, wine, cocktails, and conversation we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs in New Haven. I'm Faith Middleton.